Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome into 11 Personnel. It's UK Pro Day. I'm Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett. And we're here to talk about it all, the latest in spring practice and everything else around college football in the last week or so. Luckett, it's a weird pro day. It's weird not being there. I like just seeing all the folks and kind of yucking it up a little bit, you know?
Just football people, just yucking it up.
Mm-hmm. We're still waiting.
Doesn't get more day.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate.
Well, because, like, not only do you get a bunch of dudes who just – that's their jobs is just go around and watch football and, like, time kids exercising and stuff, but then you just got a bunch of – it really is just a ton of football guys. And then the players, they've worked really hard, but focusing on doing drills isn't the same as focusing on a play. So they can kind of – you know, when they're over, when they're not doing stuff, they can kind of just relax and hang out. So, yeah, stinks not being there, but they'll be chopping it up here shortly. Jamin Davis is obviously the star of the show. Dude is he's pretty good. He's flown up draft boards, and despite that, he's still going to do all of the tests today.
Right, 100% participation today. So he's really trying to grow that more. He's going to have a lot of eyes on him today. That's probably going to be news pub from that if he has post some good numbers, which everybody's posting monster numbers at these pro days.
God, everybody.
Did you see this morning LSU ran in all three of the receivers? So it was Chase, Terrace Marshall, and one other that's escaping me. And we're starting right now, it looks like the stream. But all those guys ran 4.38s. So so you're telling me they're equally fast.
Yeah. And the thing is, behind the scenes, every person has a stopwatch. And so normally what they'll do is they'll basically compare like two or three guys' numbers and then just use the average of that. But That's not the numbers we get. The numbers we get are from UK Media Relations, and they're just kind of blasted out. And they almost always blast out their best.
Yeah, that's what everybody's doing. It's not just like a UK thing.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing that.
And everybody needs to know that starting next week in the world's best professional women's soccer players, they're going to be playing in our state. Racing Louisville FC kicks off its NWSL era. When next weekend, Racing will host the Orlando Pride at 7 p.m. That's Saturday, April 10th, as part of NWSL's Challenge Cup, a tournament leading up to the regular season starting in mid-May. As with the pro men's club, Louisville City FC, Racing calls home the sparkling new Lynn Family Stadium. It's just east of downtown in Butchertown. You can see it from the expressway on I-64. It's a beautiful place. If you haven't been yet, this is the perfect chance to not only see a wonderful venue, but also the world's best women's soccer league. Household names like Megan Rapinoe, Alex Morgan, and Carly Lloyd, they're all coming to Louisville, starting with Morgan's Orlando Pride. And here's the thing, too. We got our own World Cup player. Yugi Nagasoto is repping Racing Louisville all season long. And right now, if you go get tickets at RacingLouFC.com, that's RacingLouFC.com, use that promo code KSR, and you'll get discounted tickets. That's right. The $20 tickets, they're even at a deeper, steeper discount to all of our listeners. So go out there today, check out some world-class soccer. Actually, let's call it football. World-class football this spring and summer with Racing Louisville. RacingLouFC.com, promo code KSR. We got Cash with a mustache on the set with Dick Gabriel. So I'm sure there will be some insightful commentary there. I like the enormous banner that they just hang up for this event. It's like the one event they have it for. I don't know if they pull it off the stadium or what, but it does look pretty cool just surrounding the entire indoor facility. Which I guess, hell, is Nutter the
doing the vertical?
Yeah, is Nutter the only thing that's not sponsored by Joe Kraft?
Yeah, it may be. It was before Joe Kraft's time. That Nutter, wasn't Kentucky one of the first ones to have that indoor?
Yeah, yeah.
Indoor practice facility. Yeah.
It was pretty ahead of its time. But like everything, you know, it goes out of style. Hell, the original Nutter training facility, the one that's on Alumni, that was state of the art back in Freddie's day. Right. You know, so, you know, I'm
that was the football facility before they actually had a football facility. Everything was in there, wasn't it? All the offices and stuff.
Yeah, offices, weight room. They even had a meeting room. I think that meeting room actually got put in once they moved the weight room. Yeah, and it was kind of cool too because they had this really old Wildcat, like stained glass thing that was part of it. And I always thought that was neat, covering the team back in the day, trophy room, all that good stuff. But they've since upgraded. They've upgraded a lot of things. One thing I did want to mention too about pro day numbers too, I love that everybody's just like, Justin Fields had a monster workout. And it's like,
Jamin Davis just got up on that vertical. Yeah. But yeah, Fields, the pro day quarterbacks, they're those workouts that people overreact so much to them. Mac Jones missed two throws yesterday and people were freaking out on the internet, and like, it's a controlled workout. So these guys should be balling out, and they're throwing to guys they've thrown to for the last, you know, 3-4 years.
Yeah. And it's against air. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's the part of the draft thing that's fun because we can analyze everything, you know? And that's what we love.
And it's
to
on
do.
TV now. They've publicized it so much. Yeah.
Right. But like,
I remember when Johnny Football did his, he came out in helmet and shoulder pads.
Oh yeah.
Everybody was like, oh my goodness. He had so much zip on the ball.
I mean, Jamin just jumped so high. They had to move up
yeah, that's what it looked like to me.
That he like basically cleared the rack. So they had to move it up for him so he could jump higher.
He's a freak, man.
That's hilarious. But it's my thing too. Is like the scouts. We've always known that Justin Fields was a great athlete. His knocks was that he sucked in 2 out of the 3 big games he played in this year.
Right.
He was not good against Indiana, and he was not good in the national championship game. In the Clemson game, he played like a bat out of hell. But aside from that, he just wasn't
superstar in that game.
Yeah, but like inconsistency, that's the problem. It's not his athleticism. Like that's obvious. Same thing, like we aren't going to be wild away of Mac Jones' athleticism. I was wild away about, oh my God, he almost cleared another rack. Jesus. But Jamin's jumping. You're going to get a lot of that in this podcast, folks. That's what's going to make this fun. But like Wayne and Dickerson, watching him do cartwheels, like that guy, he's going up my board. The other center who, I love Drake Jackson. My next favorite center in the draft is the dude from the D3 guy from, I think it's Wisconsin Whitewater, maybe.
And he's got a weird name.
Belly out. He's like 6 foot even. He's never played center before. So to practice snapping, Andy Staples had a video of him. Like, it reminded me of this fair game where you're throwing a ball at like a bottle and you're trying to like knock it off. He was basically doing that as a center, like except with snaps. So that was, I'm thoroughly entertained by that guy. I wish I could remember his name.
Yeah. He's going to come off the board in the second round. It's Quinn. And then it starts with an M. I was going to say manure, but that's not, it's like Manurcis. It's like, it's such a Wisconsin name.
Right.
But yeah, it sounded like he was a guy that just showed up at the Senior Bowl because he didn't play last year. People were thinking like, you know, 6th round pick or something. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, he would kick major butt there in Mobile. And now he's going to be a 2nd round pick.
Awesome. Drake Jackson. He was down at the Senior Bowl. Brandon
Echols up next.
As well, he said he sprained his AC joint. The guy who runs that gym, Nagy, when he shared that story about, he said something about like Drake popping his arm out, but still refusing to come out. Drake downplayed it. I really wanted him to yuck it up, but Drake's not going to be that kind of guy. He said he had to miss a month, but kept playing through it because he's like, you know, not many people get this opportunity. So that served him well. I'm curious, Luckett. I mean, we're obviously going to get into it more as the draft draws closer, and after today, we'll get a better picture of where people stand. But are we right around like 5-6 guys getting picked?
Yeah, I think right now we're looking at obviously Jamin Davis probably day one, mm-hmm. Kelvin Joseph day two.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then day three is where all the action is going to be. When you look at, I think Eccles and Bohanna are both going to get picked. I think Duffy's going to get picked.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets us to five. And Drake Jackson is going to get picked. I think they have six right now.
Max Duffy, he could become the first player ever drafted in the Australian Rules Football League and the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny how he kind of, he's like, you know, I kind of, it's like, it was a real big deal when I was 21 or 22 getting drafted. And he's like, now I realize like, that's not the, there's a lot more to go still, you know?
And then today, I think it's probably big for two guys specifically. I think Boogie Watson and Landon Young, if they put up some numbers today, maybe they could get a team to fall in love with them, similar to Georgia Asafo-Ajay,
mm-hmm.
where they could go off in the seventh. But when you talk about Eccles and Bohanna, Drake, I think you're looking at fifth, sixth, maybe seventh round. For those guys. And then Duffy's going to go somewhere. Punters usually, they go off randomly for teams. Mm-hmm. It could happen in the fifth. It could happen, you know, in the seventh. But I feel pretty comfortable that somebody's going to pick him up.
Yeah, and so in Boogie's case, he's got the versatility thing really going for him.
Right.
You know,
I thought it was a good sign yesterday saying that other teams have looked at him. I'm in a different spot. That tells me, like, he's a player that an NFL team can be like, okay, we can get him on here. He can play special teams, but he can potentially play multiple positions for us. So that would bring heavy value in a 53-man roster.
Yeah, yeah.
Back up to multiple spots.
Right, right. Somebody gets hurt, we can put him at two different places. And, man, nice jump at Eccles. So that you're exactly right on that. And that goes back to what Wolford said in his opening kind of press conference for UK, talking about only having seven dudes or, you know,
right.
He's like, you got to know a little bit of everything. And at linebacker, where so many dudes are getting shoulder injuries here and there.
Yeah.
He even has tape coming in off a week of practice, making a goal line stand as a Michael linebacker, not
right.
playing that position
right.
all year. So he's got that going for him. The thing that Landon has working against him is that he doesn't have a ton of pass pro film, but he can almost use that as advantage. Like, I'm actually better at that than you think. And if he can just show off some lateral quickness in the shuttles today, then I think that can go a long way for him.
Yeah. That's why I asked him yesterday at guard, because he has that power where he could, I think, slide inside and be kind of for a power or inside zone team, be a guard for them. But then positional value, like you said, if he could, that's why I asked if he could play guard, because if he does guard, then the team could be like, okay, he can be kind of our swing guy here on the interior, guard or tackle.
I like that Phil just smacked the absolute hell out of that.
Yeah.
The little vertical.
Did you all do these at the sales?
You know, I think we had, like, I want to say that before my senior year, we got one of these vertical things. And it was kind of a big deal, and it was fun. It was fun to do all these workouts. You know, I got timed at a 4.79 or something like that. But it was always great, because there was one coach who was always 0.2 seconds faster than the other coach. And you're obviously not paying attention to the other guy. He was just thinking you were slow. So, but those, it's fun to go through them. I can't imagine the amount of times that they've done this. That would be
practicing, right?
Yeah, and now it might have been TJ Carter. I forget who talked about. No, it was probably Landon. How these things normally are broken up a little bit more, to where it's you do combine in February, then you do pro day in March, and it kind of breaks up the monotony a little bit. And
yeah,
they've just been spending, you know, 3 months or so doing the same. Yeah, that would drive me insane after a while.
Yeah. Getting into other stuff, Nick, I don't know if you saw this. It's not something we talked about before, but Chad Morris has been hired.
Oh.
but it's got a high school head coach.
Ooh, going back to his roots.
He's going back to Texas. Allen, I think it's at that Allen school. You've seen the pictures. It's the one with the ridiculous stadium. He's going back to high school.
There was like Baker and I'm pretty sure Baker Mayfield, like Colt McCoy. They went to Allen High School, right?
Baker went to, he was from Austin. He went to Lake Travis.
Oh, Lake Travis.
I'm
getting West, my enormous Texas schools mixed
you're
up.
Thinking, I think what you're thinking of is Westlake, which is in Austin, which had Drew Brees, Nick Foles, Ellinger went there, and a few others. It's become a powerhouse for quarterbacks. But yeah, Allen's one of the bigger ones. I'm sure there's some people we know that went there. But yeah, Chad Morris is going to be high school football coach.
Oh, man. Also, it would be a bad look if Max Duffy couldn't jump high, right? Like, you're a punter, you're supposed to have a big leg. Come on.
Yeah, maybe. How do we think? I'd like to get some film of Sebastian Janikowski going through his pro day.
You have a cigarette in his mouth during it? Yeah. God, that guy is he's got to be just kicking balls somewhere, right? Like I imagine Sebastian Janikowski being a traveling exhibitionist to where he goes like county fairs and just kicks balls. Like, I want to see how far I can kick. I'll show you how far I can kick a football.
Yeah,
that strikes me as his retirement plan. Although
instead of the long drive competitions. He's just in like the kick a ball really far competitions.
Man, I hope I don't get any question asking competitions with you because you're just asking all the good questions now. Look, I'm like on the hot seat over here. Yesterday, during Tuesday's workouts Tuesday's interviews with Liam Cohen, I couldn't tell you how many. Every time Luck could ask a question, man, that's a good question. And then he'd kind of go into more detail. Dude, you and Cohen are becoming pals, man. What the hell?
Yeah. Just two football minds getting together and talking shop. But I will say this about Liam. He does give some really good answers, I think. Now, that could change over time once, you kind of go through this whole process.
Well, and you tighten it up when it gets closer to games, you know. Yeah.
But, yeah, he does. And I think Brad White as well. I think from a media place where we sit, as you see Wolford on TV right now, we were pretty fortunate to have two guys like that. I think that they give real smart, calculated answers, especially when you ask some scheme stuff. I think they do a good job explaining it, and they're I think they get excited when you ask stuff like that because that's their specialty.
Well, and they don't give the snappy quotes like Benny Snell didn't ever say anything very insightful, but it was fun.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They give like long-winded, pretty insightful responses, and I enjoy like the kind of nuance behind it all.
Like Brad White's big cup that you had a lot of fun blogging about.
Yeah, it's in my comparison was the seniors. They can drink out of the big cup.
Yeah,
they can take four fingers of Old Forester, no problem. But you try to give that to underclassmen. All of a sudden they're hammered and they're stammering all over the place and you need the upperclassmen to carry them home. And that's kind of the balance that I think each side, or at least on the defensive side where you've got a lot of experience, that's the balance that Brad White's kind of having to deal with a lot of experienced safeties, but you're wet behind the ears on the edge and kind of in the interior. So it's a fun little balancing act. And I like too, that they, It strikes me as, like, whenever we would hear about one side being better than the other side in practice, like, it would always seem to come back to just, like, I would almost chalk it up to it was just that day was being better. Now it seems like it's more of this guy ran better stuff that day, or they called better, like, they were ready for their shots, and they were more better prepared on what the defense called that day. It just seems a lot more calculated than previously. Maybe that's just because of the way that these guys are talking. But nevertheless, it does make this much more exciting to discuss.
Yeah. I think NFL background has a lot to do with it, too. They just come from a different different, I think, structure.
Yeah.
Where there's just, I guess, more freedom or whatnot. But yeah, I think we're getting some good stuff here this spring from those guys. And it's needed because we can't really go to anything. Like at the pro day, what would you be doing right now here, Nick? They're doing the vertical jumps. We got behind them. You've got coaches, other staff members. You see NFL personnel people sprinkled in.
So I would probably be off in the corner. I would probably, they'll usually have a lot of the other teammates show up. So I'd probably be talking to them, maybe chatting up a little bit with them. And, what kind of score we got here? And the thing is, from a lot of those little conversations, you get stuff. Like there was a guy who, you remember Mike Douglas? He was a pretty good football player for us. And in one pro day, we were just talking ball. And I was like, Stoops' stuff pretty well. What do you think about his defense? He's like, dude, I brought up Rick Minner. He was like, dude, compared to Rick Minner, I'm a smart guy. He's like, but I could not figure out his playbook was bigger than the offense's playbook. Avery Williamson, a dude who's been in the NFL for a long time, he couldn't even figure it out. And he was supposed to be the one calling plays. Like, so you get some kind of fun anecdotes, stories along those lines. You also kind of hear, how so-and-so has been doing in practice, maybe in some of these conversations. And that was one nugget I wanted to get into yesterday that Cohen affirmed publicly. Kaya Sharon might be the real deal, Adam Luckett. Yeah. I don't think any of us anticipated that.
Yeah, as a Chargers guy just came up and talked to Landon Young, so maybe we need to make a mental note of that. Looks like he's watching closely.
I love doing that too.
Sharon, it seems like, is exceeding expectations, which is a little bit of a surprise. Now, Sharon did have, like, his junior tape was pretty good. Senior year, he got hurt. I don't think he only played a handful of games. He didn't play in the playoffs, I don't believe. Sharon was a guy who threw off launch point a lot, moved around, showed the ability to stretch the field vertically. So there were some tools there. But, yeah, it seems like they're really liking what they're seeing from that young cat.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you hear. I couldn't tell you how many times I've heard some, people talking about X young player. And I want to wait until I hear it again and again and again before I finally share it. Because, like, how many times does somebody make a big play in practice and you say, oh, my God. Like, remember Mahoney, the kid from Cincinnati who was a walk-on running back? Mm-hmm. Dude was he was awesome in practice, but he was never going to play. He would do some crazy stuff, but I'm not going to share that because what does it matter? But in some instances, it ends up coming to fruition. And the Sharon stuff, not only the way that Cohen talked about him, but the fact that the kid actually has a big arm and that
he's an athlete.
And he's a cool customer. I think it's really important because with quarterbacks, between the years is big arm, big brain. That's what you need as a quarterback. Those two things are incredibly important. So the fact that Cohen already likes what he sees. Shout out to Darren Henshaw for giving him something to work with. So, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking up the quarterbacks, which I think is kind of expected. You don't want to get in here and talk down about them, in spring. So they're hyping them up. So we'll see. But it's definitely better than the alternative for sure.
Yeah, and the thing, what encourages me about Sharon too, is that it's nice that you have an insurance policy of sorts, because we've had the Rutgers stuff with Gavin Wimsett. That is apparently kind of...
It sounds like they weathered the storm.
Yeah, yeah. But in talking with some people, like UK feels good, but they aren't. They don't know what's going to happen. Now, I did hear that a commitment video might be in the works, so that's something to look forward to. That
a little Roush scoop here
appears for the people imminent. Whenever I said that on the radio, when TJ was like, "Dude, you can't just go saying that. You got to like tease it up a little bit." It's like I don't know how to share this stuff, so I'm just going to share the news as I get it. So that's good, especially on the heels where you have Travion Longmire committing to Kentucky on Friday, and then you have Dane Key release a top 10 that isn't a top 10 that really would get you shaken in your boots. You know, no offense to...
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's when that's the first takeaway I had.
There wasn't a lot of schools out there that you can, like, are obviously a better choice than Kentucky. There's no Ohio State. There's no LSU. There's no Alabama. No
Blue Bloods.
Right. You had Oregon, but, like, I mean, you know, Kentucky's beating guys for Oregon. That's a long way away, you know.
Jared Casey Burton just recently.
Yeah. Two guys that grew up liking Oregon. So, and then you had the comments he had about just playing for school. Like, that's the kind of stuff that gets to your Gavin Wimsatts. And I know we talk about momentum in recruiting, but it's, you can't measure it. But look what happened with that official visit that with Bo Allen, Justin Rogers, John Young. Like, when one gets going, the dominoes, they kind of start falling. You know,
right,
a lot of these guys are just looking for some sort of affirmation and confirmation. They like it, but they're not 100% sure. If other guys start jumping on board and they feel like they can get there, then that's all they need to hear.
Yeah, and the secret in all of this, these top 10, like, all these teams, they have offensive issues to some extent. Like, there's not a juggernaut offense on this list, in my opinion. Like, Oregon still trying to figure out stuff on offense. They got more head now. They think they got to figure it out. Wisconsin's had quarterback issues for forever.
Yeah,
they've kind of had the same issues with Kentucky. Mike Leach of Mississippi State were bad last year. Mm-hmm. Your cousin Jeff, they've had their issues the last couple of years.
Right.
Virginia Tech, South Carolina, Michigan State.
Yeah.
Arkansas has got a Bryles, but, you know, they weren't great last year, so. You know, the top 10 makes it feel good, you know.
No, it definitely does. And having just the other Frederick Douglass kids there, too.
Yeah, you have to wonder how big getting Jagger Burton and then Wandell Robinson, I think that's going to help a lot probably in this recruitment. That they're taking the sell, and then he sees if Wandell has a good year. So, yeah, I do feel there's obviously been wins for a while about Key, how it could be pretty tough for Kentucky to get him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of that process was LSU, like a Texas, Ohio State maybe getting in and involved.
Yeah.
With his top 10. Now, things can change. But as we sit right today, I think Kentucky should feel pretty, pretty good about their chances.
Yeah, and another one that we always forget, because he's technically Indiana now because he transferred to play ball over there. I guess he lives in Indiana now. Keontae Goodwin. Yeah. Got a lot of good stuff coming from that camp recently, which surprised me. I thought if Kentucky was going to get there, it was going to be – I thought it was going to be, all right, he wants to get recruited by everybody, and then it's kind of a Jagger Burton situation, if you will, where – he's getting recruited by Ohio State and Alabama, and then you get to the road, into the road, the spots start filling up, and then he's like, okay, I'm in on Kentucky. It sounds like he's kind of in on Kentucky now, which, and that's even as they're talking about visits opening back up farther down the road.
Yeah, and it was part of the reason coordinator change. You needed to have some positivity about the offense, and I think they have that right now, and that pays big dividends on the recruiting trail, especially when you hadn't played a game. So you can just sell the future, and there's no real past to worry about. And that's Kentucky under Stoops. They've done that before they ever played a game in 2013. And they were able to sell the future. And that's something that they've proven to be pretty good at. And it helps when you can sell the future when there's no real past going against you. And that's what they have now with this. It's a blank slate with this offense. And I think that's a huge selling point for this class of 2021. Which you look at some of their targets, it's got a chance to be their best class from a ratings perspective. Like, it's got a chance to be a legit top 20 class, maybe get close to 15.
Mm-hmm. It's great. I mean, we've talked more about recruiting than I anticipated, but you look at some of the four-star talent they're recruiting out of Georgia. Mikel Williams is a five-star.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Jaron Ellis is his name. I mean, another four-star linebacker from South Georgia. they're hitting it hard. And then you got the receiver from Michigan that's a four-star. So there's, like you said, a lot of potential. Travion Longmire got things going. Like, what do you like about watching Longmire's game?
Just his length and speed. Those are two traits you really can't coach. Like, you want guys that are long, you want guys that are fast. You can't make them any longer. Speed is a thing. You kind of have it or you don't. You can always get guys stronger. But he has those two. I think he could be that typical boundary corner for Kentucky. His cornerback tape is limited. It's a lot of receiver, running back type stuff playing for Corbin. But you could see the traits with him. He's a guy I'm pretty excited about. I think he's going to need some development time.
Right.
But you can see him turning into a big-time corner, potential NFL draft pick for sure.
He's got the juice, man. He's got a lot of juice.
That's a good word. He has juice. That's a very good word. You can see it in his running style. There's multiple times where he's making people miss in space. There's a couple coverage issues or coverage plays where he's really he's fluid. He's staying with his guy, locks hips and makes a play on the ball. Just a really good athlete, first off. And then everything builds from off of that. He's going to be a fun guy, I think, for them to get in and coach and kind of grow with him because there's a really high ceiling, I think, for him.
What else is great about him, too, is he gets it. In his commitment video, it ends with Tom Leach calling a touchdown pass he had at Kroger Field. I mean, just genius. That's about as baller a move as you can do, you know?
Good branding.
What a flex. What an absolute flex. So, Travion Longmire, first in-state commitment for Kentucky, the third overall. And between all those guys, I think they all are probably anticipated to play defensive back at the next level. Mm-hmm. So your kind of quarterback prospects, they're dwindling. There won't be too much more. Speaking of flex, I want to talk about Flax, not Flex.
Yeah, I knew where you're going there.
Because Jeremy Flax is basically going to be Kentucky's right tackle, barring something crazy. Nasir Watkins still isn't back from that injury. Shout out to John Hale for thinking to ask Mark Stoops about that, because that's just something. I mean, we've gotten like two sentences of Stoops on that since it happened. It's kind of because we got lost in the shuffle because he just wasn't playing. It was like, is he hurt? And he's like, yeah, he had season-ending knee surgery. He's like, oh,
by the way, yeah.
You know, like, thanks for sharing. So Watkins is still out, and Watkins, you don't find many players like him who have played. God knows. I mean, was it 60? I think he's played in 60 games, but he only has one career start. Like, he's played at 38 career games he's appeared in with one start, and it was his first game. That just doesn't happen often. He's been consistently in the rotation throughout his career. Now would be his time to start, but he's injured, and Jeremy Flax is Cohen, I think his words were surprised by his athleticism. So good to hear.
He was a guy with a ton of potential coming out of junior college. Kentucky won a big recruiting battle over Auburn. Mm-hmm. Like, this was the expectation. Maybe have an adjustment year one, but then really step in and be a starter and take control of that position. And Cohen called him a cornerstone. Like, when you're throwing out the word cornerstone, to me, that's a pretty good sign. Like, they're really comfortable with him at right tackle is what that sounded like to me. And when you think about the two bookends now with Kennard and Flax, that's a lot of power out there on the perimeter, on the edge of the offense.
A lot of power.
Dependable, half three guards with Horsey, Fortner, and Dotson. So I think, you know, that makes you feel pretty good about the offensive line. I think that they figured out that position already and that it's a guy with a lot of talent.
Yeah, and to add to that, he got that extra year to break in, and it's not going to count against him if he doesn't want it to. You know, and I think he would still have 3 years if he uses that COVID year.
I'm still just like, when I follow these rosters, I'm just keeping it up with. I'm under the impression that a lot of these kids just aren't going to take that extra year. So if they do, they can. But until they announce they do, I think I'm just keeping it as is. Like, the general freshman to senior, and then the redshirt year if they have it. But we'll see with all that, because
if somebody it's were a wild west though,
out here. Some
it would be a JUCO kid though, you know.
Yeah,
to get more bang for their buck. But nevertheless,
Hoskins.
That was could have been 7 year Phil. Nevertheless, though, that was a significant development. We also got some Tay-Tay Kroom shout-outs, which
Stoops we've gotten that right.
Anticipated it kind of going into the spring. To hear it actually happen, that's good. That's good. Brandon Echols, 42.5-inch vert, was reported. Jamin Davis, 42-inch vert.
Freaks, man.
Freaks. But Krooms, this is he fits he has a skill set that they want to see, and the fact that he's doing it some of the time in practice is good. Like, this is where you need to hear him do a few things and then start to put it together as we get into that. That's the trajectory, the path you want to see him take.
Absolutely. And I like I said, I think it's good things. And Krooms, I think, is a guy that they want to succeed because of the Louisville recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a selling point for them. Having guys from there that have good careers and end up getting drafted, that can be a big, big deal for the program to be able to sell that when they go into Louisville and recruit players out of there.
Big, big selling point. Speaking of Louisville, over the weekend, we one of the greats from the city of Louisville. I would argue the most influential football guy to ever in the history of the state of Kentucky, Howard Schnellenberger, died at 87. He was an All-American at Kentucky after an incredible career at Flagey, which you want to talk about that Flagey football team. Schnellenberger at end, Paul Horning,
mm-hmm.
Tailback. Braves. Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. And those old Flagey guys, nobody's a prouder group than those old Flagey guys. They talk about each other like they were God's gift to football, and so their stories are always great.
Right.
And that's where we get a little bit of a unique perspective on this, because most people know Schnellenberger. They might remember him from helping out at the U. Like nationally, they know him from the U. I think statewide, people know them from Louisville, but we kind of get a different angle of it because Schnellenberger stories are like local folklore. That's the kind of stuff that like our dads and uncles, like, oh, that time that Howard did blah, 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 blah. So we've got a little bit of that too. And that's what why I wrote about the story of Bear Bryant supposedly bringing in the bishop to recruit Howard Schnellenberger. Mm-hmm. He was a good Catholic boy. He wasn't going to flip from Indiana. Could bring in the governor, could bring in anybody. But you know, you get a conduit to Jesus Christ himself with the Archbishop. That's going to change Mr. Schnellenberger's mind. But those kind of stories were great. And what I didn't realize is until I saw my old grade school coach posted, I forgot that there was a ton of dudes that played at U of L back around then, because he was really just building the roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my grade school coach played at Louisville for Howard. My high school coach did. Hell, most of my coaches were Schnellenberger guys. My family played for Schnellenberger. I'm sure that was the case where you knew a Schnellenberger guy or two that was around whenever you were playing football as well. His fingerprints are all over the state, and he's just one of the greats that we got to salute.
Yeah. Builder. It's probably his college football legacy more than anything else. He built it, you know, the Miami one, of course. He saved Louisville from the dead. If it wasn't for him, Louisville might not have a football program. Mm-hmm. They might be in the Big East. They might be one of those Big East teams in the basketball-only conference.
Right.
And then he did it again at Florida Atlantic. And he really had probably two moves he probably shouldn't have made. He went to the USFL instead of staying in Miami. He went to Oklahoma instead of staying at Louisville. I think those are probably the two moves he probably would take back, but I think it also contributes to his legacy that he did kind of rebuild and revitalize programs at three different spots. And just it's kind of a shame that he can't get, like, the Hall of Fame has that rule.
Yeah, you got to be – it's like a certain winning percentage, and he's right around 500.
Yeah, and it's also, to me, it goes back to – you know, Kentucky probably could have hired him a couple times.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
Mark Story mentioned the time that they hired Hal Mumme as one of them, which, you know, you can't blame him now.
Yeah. He was,
he was older.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was after he flamed out at Oklahoma. So you couldn't really blame him. And then there was another time, I think it was after they got rid of Fran Kersey. And I'm not sure. I think when Howard was.
What year was Claiborne hired? Because I think they could have got him then.
And I think, yeah. And so they had two former UK guys. And Claiborne had actually had more success at Maryland at that point instead of Howard at Miami, which I believe was like 79.
I'm looking up when Claiborne.
So hell, Freddie could have been a Claiborne. Because I think Kersey's last year was 79, so 80. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I was thinking like 82 to 89 was Claiborne's run at Kentucky. I'm pulling it up right now.
Okay. Yeah, internet's probably moving a little slow with all the streaming stuff.
82 was when they hired Claiborne. And let's see where Howard was in 82.
Yeah, he would have been in Miami at the time, I guess. He probably, I don't know if he did well, a championship.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he had not won a national title yet. They won it in 83. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if he would have left then, but there was some I guess that the one time really was only Hal Mumme time. I thought there the years might have overlapped there when with Claiborne. But yeah, they I guess they could have hired him instead of Curry. That probably would have been the big one.
That would have been the big one. And that would have been.
They would have had to hire him away from Louisville. At that Which point.
Would it have been a great look? I don't know. But I also love the Howard story about, you know, they're at Cardinal Stadium. And he brought some big, big names into that old baseball field that was.
They were an independent. Carpet. They were an independent. So they had to go out and aggressively schedule.
Brought Texas in. I think he brought Penn State in as well.
Yep.
Won a Fiesta Bowl at U of L. And the one. That's why he said he left too, is because they were going to join a conference and he didn't want to join a conference. And that's at one of the games.
College football was way different back then with all that. Now you have to be in a conference pretty much. But back then there was freedom with being an independent. Florida State was an independent. They built national championships. Miami had run as an independent.
So
there was some value in doing that. But the games just changed. But yeah, there was definitely like the year Louisville went to Fiesta Bowl and pulled up all the independents. Louisville, Miami, Florida State, Notre Dame, Penn State, they were all independent. South Carolina independent. So and that was 1990. So it was just a different world back then.
And it was only 20 years ago.
Right. Right.
But he made that move, and that's gonna just I wanted to tell the Mick Jagger story, but you can look it up. Just look up Howard Schnellenberger and Mick Jagger. Very funny story. Much better told elsewhere.
In 1993, Texas came to Rinky Dink Cardinal Stadium.
Muhammad Ali was at the game. There's a video of Ali out at midfield before the coin toss. But they it's a great segue because today Louisville announced that they're playing a home-and-home at Georgia. And you were having a conversation with Eric Crawford, who he's got the Howard Schnellenberger mentality. He wants Louisville to schedule everybody. When we're firmly in the camp of Louisville, what are you doing, you idiots? We've lost to Georgia plenty. It's not very fun. Oh gosh. Oh no, he's breaking up now. Okay. Oh no. Oh, okay, there we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now.
All righty. So here's my thing with it. Like in college football, there's obviously tiers, you know, there's the elite of the elite, which is Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, teams that are consistently competing for national championships. And everywhere else, teams are trying to kind of fill in the gaps in between them and collect wins and build stability so they can potentially take a run at people. As a program, especially when you're like at middle of the road in a conference, which is where Louisville, Kentucky, really where everybody is outside of a handful of teams.
Right.
You have to be smart about how you build it because stability and consistently winning over time does more for you than anything else. Does more for recruiting, does more for all that. Like like let's just talk for Kentucky from standpoint. Like if Kentucky now has built stability in their Mark Stoops, they're winning 7-8 games a year. They're competing in the conference. If they want to go out and schedule another non-conference game, they should do it, but it should not be against Clemson. Like they should go out and schedule Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma State.
Like Louisville this year schedules Ole Miss, and that
Fine. Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair. That's fine. I think it's silly to play Ole Miss and UCF but in the same offseason, but I think that is fine.
It'd be Kentucky playing West Virginia. Any team that you could potentially match up with in like a bowl game. Yeah. Like,
but going out and you control three games a year. You have your eight conference games, your plus one with your rival. You have three games that you control. And you're going out and just saying, let's go play a national championship contender, a team that's one or two or three in the recruiting rankings every year. And under your control, that's what you're doing. That's reckless to me. That's just reckless. You should not be doing that. And Louisville's in a situation, to me, where I sit, where they should be trying to build stability. That's what they used to have, and it's gone away here. With how Petrino imploded. Mm-hmm. Like they need to be like, let's get to 7-8 wins a year. Let's keep going to bowl games and let's keep rolling forward. Let's not litter our schedule with what their schedule is now. It's littered with tough non-conference opponents.
They aren't in the Big East anymore. They don't need
the schedule like that either. No. You're right. That's
how
you're
not in Conference USA trying to bring in Florida State. Like that was their one big game a year. Dude, you play Clemson every year. What are you? You already got one of these games. Like mm-hmm. it's so stupid. And particularly
it's a mid-major mindset.
When you look at their ACC record in the last 4 years, I'm sure it's below 500 or right around there. And that's with the ACC being terrible. Like that Satterfield, when he got coach of the year, ACC was horrific. And they exceeded expectations. They took advantage of that. Well, the ACC is going to get back to normal. Water always finds its level. And they have to worry about winning there. So bankroll some wins and get up some steam. And I haven't seen a lot of Louisville, it's mostly just me arguing with TJ because he's firmly in the camp that play all the fun teams. It's like, it's not fun getting your ass kicked by Georgia. Been there, done that. Now, it might be fun going to one of these different stadiums. Like I would make an exception for Notre Dame just because Notre Dame has some sort of air about it. Because you know
they do that in the ACC though already.
Exactly. So it's unnecessary, and it's really setting up their next coach for failure because Satterfield, if he's still here in 26, 27, that'll be a death sentence.
19-22 is their ACC record the last 5 years.
Yeah, like what are you doing? What are you doing, U of L? You've had plenty of fun. Like the Auburn game at Chick-fil-A, you did that once, and you had Lamar Jackson, and you just got your
But you don't know like that you were gonna have Lamar Jackson when you scheduled that game,
and they still got their floor clean with them though. Like
I'm all good with the scheduling, like being aggressive, but scheduling it like a Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State as anybody else but a legit kind of contender, I think it's kind of reckless scheduling. And I think Louisville, they've got to get back to a point where they can build some stability. And scheduling like that is not going to give you any stability. Yeah, you may have a good year one time. You may upset somebody. But if you keep scheduling like that, you're going to have years where you go 2-2, maybe 1-3 in the non-con.
Well, I think part of the reason why they
really have a good season,
I think one of the reasons they went back to it though was just because they had Georgia scheduled previously.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. After I tweeted that stuff out this morning, I forgot that they had that and something happened.
It was probably 22 maybe was the year they had it scheduled for. But Georgia, they bought out that game. I'm not really sure why. But I mean, this our discussion right now is why Nebraska was trying to get out of that Oklahoma game they have this year. Now that's mm-hmm. a different ball part. Like
it's the same thing we're talking about right here. Right.
Yeah. Like they want to do it. That's why they want to, but they can't because they're Nebraska. They're it's they're trying to re, it's like it's the anniversary of like 17 college football game of the centuries. We have so many games of the century. The sports writers were really not very creative with their tags back in the day.
Yeah. But,
and also like Nebraska, you've talked a lot of shit. Go back it up. So you can't get out of this now, but that's what they need to do. That's what Purdue, it ticks me off Purdue's schedule. I get you might have to play Notre Dame every once in a while.
Plus, they got 9 conference games too.
Yeah, like they not only do they have Notre Dame this year, they have another really good out-of-conference game. And I'm like, dude, are you trying to get Jeff Fire? Yeah, it makes no sense. It's like, guys.
Yeah.
Freaking break.
Like, I wanted to bring this back to Kentucky. I think eventually Kentucky's in a point where they should probably try to schedule someone down the road, but I get why they don't want to do that. But I think we are getting to a point in football where you kind of have to.
Yeah, it's Oregon
State. But when the time comes, Nick, I want them to schedule like an Iowa. I don't want them to schedule Clemson.
Yeah.
You know, I like play, be smart in how you
or
do it.
Ohio State, just because you recruit against them sometimes doesn't mean you need to play them. Like, no.
Right. Yeah. I think it's silly to play those teams.
Yeah. It's
I had somebody ask me, one of my friends asked me this morning, he's like, what is better from a recruiting standpoint? Winning those games against nobodies or getting in a stage to play like somebody in like a big power in a recruiting fertile area. And I said, you know, winning over time is always going to have more long-term value. Like you can sell, hey, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're going to this bowl, we're going to that bowl. It's not like you're not playing anybody marquee on your schedule.
Like, yeah.
You're in a power conference, so you're going to be in big games.
You're playing rivalry games
you're going to play every year.
You're playing Georgia, Florida, Tennessee every year right now.
Right. And then if you have – my selling point was like you should schedule those wins so then when you have a good team while you're building a program – they can have a great year because they're going to have those wins. And then you can have a year like Kentucky had in 2018, where they can go and play a brand name in a bowl game and get a big bowl win.
See, and that's my overall thing that I think trumps all of this conversation is that your marquee game should be your bowl game. And to get there, you need to bank some wins. You just do. And the bowl games we've talked about before, you get so much artificial momentum from winning a bowl game. I don't remember who won the kickoff classic last year, but if you got a bowl win, like Tennessee, for example, they lost to Cal in one of those weird games 1 year. It wasn't the season before last, but if let's say that was the team, that's the generic Power Five team that they lost to at the beginning of the season. Cause I know they had one of them. I forget exactly when it was, but let's say that was the team they lost to in their kickoff classic. Well, nobody cares when you beat Indiana in the Gator Bowl. Everybody had Tennessee as the flavor of the month. You get so much more from playing in a marquee bowl game than you do from playing in one of these things at the beginning of the year because there's a lot of them happening. And the ratings aren't as near as crazy as the bowl game ratings. And to top it all off, the recruiting bump you get from all of this is all from the bowl game. And you can't reach those highest of highs if you don't get that extra garbage win. If let's just say that Louisville team in 2026 when they play Georgia, let's say they are good. Let's say they're Kentucky 2018 good, or let's say they're Lamar Jackson good, where you're at like a 10-win season. That could keep you out of the playoff first week of the year.
Yeah. Like
your playoff conversation could be over. There was a team this year. Was it Notre Dame who lost early? And we just completely forgot about it because they won 10 straight. I think they lost somebody good. Am I right about that?
No, Notre Dame ran the table.
Who?
But there's been years in the past, like the Sam Darnold USC team lost the game or two early and totally took them out of the playoff hunt. Penn State with Saquon lost a game or two early, totally took them out of the playoff hunt. And then, you know, we just forget about them. But you're right. Like to make the playoff, like you don't need to be playing these games.
Nobody cares who you beat unless – I mean, we care to an extent, but most of this pissing contest is all about being undefeated or anything anyway. So I get that that's taking it to a different stratosphere, but it matters in the New Year's Six stuff. Kentucky beats Florida. And yet Florida's ranked higher than them with the same record in the New Year's Six. They get the New Year's Six Bowl. That's $1 million difference. And it didn't matter because it was at the beginning of the year and people forgot. Like,
yeah, I think you make a good point on the bowl games because you hear some analysts say they don't like evaluating the bowl games because they are they're such a one-off and they're so different and odd, which is true, I think, but there's still a lot of value in those games. Fans take a lot of put a lot of stock in them. Though that what happens in those games builds storylines that last the entire offseason. And they can be a huge selling point to recruiting classes. So those are big games, and they're a chance for you when you have if you consistently have creating wins, it's going to get you in better bowl games, which it's you know it's a has longer lasting impact. But I do wonder with all the playoff expanding, bowl games are losing relevance. So it makes me wonder, like, do we have to go? Do we have to, you know, do you need to schedule more marquee opponents? I guess in the regular season, which is you know we're in flux right now, but. But there's a difference. With, my thing is there's a difference between aggressive scheduling and reckless scheduling. Going out and scheduling a national title contender that has a top three roster yearly in college football when you have to play Clemson already is just silly. Like if Kentucky went out and scheduled Clemson or Ohio State, I would be pretty upset. Like this is stupid. What are we doing?
But you know what? Thankfully. Stoops isn't stupid. We're rolling with the Maxon for a while. I do hope that we'll get that Iowa game eventually just to get the alma mater rolling.
Yeah, there is something they could do. Like, I don't want to play Cincinnati. I think that would be silly. But Michigan State or Iowa, that could be fun. Or playing like a Big 12 team in Atlanta maybe for a neutral site 1 year. That could be fun. But like Duke playing Alabama. A couple years ago in that kickoff classic. What are we doing here? This is stupid.
So dumb. But we'll see. There's plenty of time to unfold. Meanwhile, mark your calendars for two losses in 2026 and 2027.
But credit Louisville when they if it ever happens, Georgia comes to Cardinal Stadium. That'll be a fun day. It'll be a fun week leading into it. Hopefully, if they have a competent team. But you also have to think, what if they don't have a competent team? What if the team stinks that year?
And they get lucky and beat Georgia on their daddy. Like, Georgia gets on probation for cheating, which...
Or no, I'm just talking about Louisville. What if, like, Louisville's not any good? Like, it's a 4-8 team. And it's like, oh, we'll host Georgia. Oh, yay, let's go watch us get our teeth kicked in.
Seriously.
So, it's a double-edged sword there for sure. But but Louisville, yeah. I think that they need to be worried about building stability. They've got all that weird stuff going on with Satterfield and going out and scheduling Georgia at this time. Just... It's a head scratcher, but to each his own.
Yep, to each his own. Well, they're about to start running at Pro Day, Luckett. I kind of want to watch it. So let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
Follow along everything on KSR. You probably already know the results by the time this podcast is released. But we appreciate y'all joining and talk a little ball with us this week. Enjoy your Easter weekend. Enjoy a Final Four. Maybe it's not so ugly. Enjoy the Sweet 16 finals. We'll have plenty of coverage of that as well on KSR. And as always, go Cats and go Kroger.